Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Do you have anything on your Christmas wish list this year, Quinn?
All I want for Christmas is you.
Is me. You got me, babe. You got me. Quinn came over to my house.
I got you,
Quinn,
babe.
Quinn came over to my house. I had a party on Sunday, and it was so much fun to be with everyone. I love having your kids over. Did they have fun? I mean, Griffin said the funniest thing when he left. Do you want to share?
No, I can't remember.
Well, he said the funniest thing. He's just a fun guy, that kid. He's just like a really good time guy.
When he said
in
to
the
Matt.
Car. So I want to be very clear. The whole family was there the whole time. Matt did like drop the family off. They came in. Matt picked the car up. He picked them up. So there was like probably a total of like 10 minutes
up. It was
that
cold.
Matt was not at my party.
At the party. At the end to get the car. And I got the kids ready and brought them downstairs. And then Griff said to Matt, "Oh, Papa, we were at the best party. Sorry that you missed it. Carrie's funny like that." I was like, what do you think just happened, Griff? Like, I felt like he was like, I'm so sorry you weren't
Harry's
invited
kind
to
of
the
funny
party.
About that. Like, no adult boys allowed is kind of the deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's so it's, you know, it's tough. It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough. But, you know, you missed a party and Griffin, I mean, we set them up for, they watched Home Alone in the other room. It was great. It was so fun.
They had a blast.
How was the rest of your day? You went to another party. Quinn and Matt were it was a party weekend for the two of them.
We're party-tastic. We went we went to a Hanukkah. You know what? It's only been two nights of Hanukkah. We've been invited to somebody's
every
house
night.
For latkes, both of them.
Is tonight do you think Jordan will make some latkes tonight for you?
Should I text her?
I think
her
she should. I think you should. I mean, it depends on if it's a Frida approved food. But I would imagine, I think Frida probably likes potatoes.
Right. Well, we had latkes at the Rogers, and then we had latkes. My friend Ella is doing construction on their house. And so they knew they had to get a place for just a couple of months while that happened. And they found like this furnished place that's very small, 3-bedroom. They have 2 kids. And they got it in July, and she was like, "This is perfect. This will be perfect for a couple of months." And they put like, they have like 4 plates and 4 cups. Like, it's like camping in a way. You know what I mean? Like, they have just exactly what they need to get by. And they've been there since July now, and they're slated to not be back into their house till February. And she's not even optimistic.
It always takes so
much. So it's this thing where she's like, "We live in this rental, but the rental is above the wine store."
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's literally in that building.
That's
so
fun.
It was fun because she invited us over for a lot because last night.
That's funny that she invited you
over. We'll be there in 1 minute.
That's,
you know, so we walked over and we saw her weird place and played with her bearded dragon, which Matt loved. So we had like this giant bearded dragon crawling all over him. And Cole got to feed it blueberries. And then I went to the boys because it was my last little chance to see Jamila, who I have been, she's been traveling a lot for work, shooting commercial stuff. And she, yeah, so I wanted to have dinner with her last night, and she made the most amazing seafood pasta. And We just joked around. We were talking about, so in my program, there was a gal that was like very sweet and put forth a toy drive that was part of our end of the year party. And she said, I'm going to have my friend who's a professional photographer come in and offer headshots because, you know, everybody's got to have a headshot for their whatever Psychology Today profile. And the guy came in and it was like a backdrop, like a school backdrop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like if you look at Psychology Today, it's like people sitting on a couch or like in the woods. I don't know. But it was like
places where you'd have therapy in the marbled, woods and on a couch.
It was like a gray and black marbled backdrop.
Okay.
And he took, and also if you look at any Psychology Today headshots, they're head shots. They're like you smiling, maybe shoulders up, pretty much. He took like full body shots.
Can I see yours, please?
You're going to die.
I need to see
yours.
You're
going to die.
Do we put them on the Patreon? Do we put them on a page?
No, it's too embarrassing. And I don't say that lightly. So here's this.
Oh, I can't wait. This is thrilling to me. You know we and love you know
you
we love a visual.
Spencer did with
Quinn,
it.
Stop it.
Can you imagine? Like I look like
Why did
Quinn, I look like a chubby little student.
Quinn,
right?
No, this is an insane angle. That's an insane angle to have someone stand. Is this person a professional?
And my boobs look like they're at my
stomach. They don't. I think like, you can, you know though, Quinn?
They're somehow exactly in the middle of my torso.
You look beautiful. Do you know what I mean? If you just zoom in, I'm zooming in on your face. What a beautiful face.
Do you see what Spencer made?
Let me see.
The craft that he made?
Did he make this or did ChatGPT make this?
I'm sure ChatGPT did, but I sent that and then he sent my picture back, you guys, and it was like I was the cover of Psychology Today with this marbled backdrop, looking wistfully over one shoulder, which is also a pose I was asked
that's
to do.
That's a I mean, it wild. Is. That's wild. Why is that that angle?
It is so.
Is this the only wild. Photo that you received, or did he do a close up?
There were three, but they're all like this. They're all full body. They're all, one of them's like dead on. It's just like.
I think you can crop and your face looks very nice and serene and peaceful.
Oh, I would. No. Matt has a picture of me that's my headshot and that he just like took on our balcony. That's, and you know, Matt's a very good photographer.
This is so funny.
It's natural lighting. It's outside. There's like a tree behind me. It's normal.
That is someone who's like, here's my resume. I've done kindergarten school shots at a public school where I also did it for donation.
Yeah, that like is, what can you even I don't, say about such a
I
shot?
I don't know what direction this person got, but it wasn't right. You know, I've just been recently watching Couples Therapy. Have you seen it?
Oh, yes. It's so great, right?
It's so great, and it makes me be like, that you should do that. You should have a job like that. You should. That's a good job for you, I think, is to give therapy for TV. Right. Do you think you'd be good at it?
You know what? Oh, God, I would love.
Holy shit. That's so cool. Quinn, see, you can rise up the ranks. You can maybe one day have Orna's phone number in your phone.
There you go. I would love nothing more than just a collection of numbers to show people.
Well, we went to here's what you need to know. At my party on Sunday, there was someone there who –
I can't believe we buried the lead.
And listen, Quinn and I used it as a networking opportunity. So there was someone at the party. It's my friend's boyfriend.
There was like six people in the room. I love that you were like, it's a networking opportunity.
There were six people and we're all sitting around my couch eating weird chili. So this guy, he works with Alec Baldwin. Okay. And
in the podcasting room.
We were like, should we do a cross promotion with Alex's podcast? I think, do you want us to
do a cross use promotion? Our we think Alec could gain a lot
from doing ours. And what's funny is obviously we have a true crime podcast. Neither one of us were like, and that's the true crime. Because we have talked about that. Anyway, what's more important though is this man has a direct line to Ilaria Baldwin, who I don't know if you guys follow Quinn.
He had Ilaria.
And
in
then
his
he
phone.
Showed he had Quinn. Her own. Ilaria's phone number in his phone in a way that was very funny.
And I quickly tried to memorize it.
I was like, Quinn, you should have taken out your phone and snapped a photo and been like, I have it. Got it. It was very funny. But Quinn was like, Quinn was fangirling. It was very fun. It was very funny. I enjoyed.
It was funny. It was very funny because Carrie introduced me as a huge Eladia fan.
Yeah, I did.
And this guy took it with absolutely not a grain of irony.
Not an ounce, not an iota,
so then I had to sort of accommodate that lack of irony as I realized how defensive he is.
Quinn, if I had put any ironic spin on it, it would have not gone well. And
you're
so
right.
I knew Quinn was there for a good time.
Because Spen was there, y'all, and Spen said cucumber, and it caused a lot of tension.
It was very, but I feel like we all handled ourselves well. We all spoke our truth in some capacity.
I was silent.
I spoke my truth. I spoke a.
But that's just because I couldn't think of the word.
Because I couldn't think race baiting. I couldn't think of the word of appropriation. I couldn't think of the word.
How you say appropriation.
I couldn't think of the word. No, I thought of the word. I just used other words to maybe hopefully. And then last night, my sister's in town. So I went and got ramen with my sister. And we went shopping. She likes to go shopping whenever she's in New York. And man, there's just a lot of stuff out on the town. There's a lot of stuff in the world.
You've been in New York.
There's stuff. No, I'm just saying shopping wise. Like, I haven't felt the holiday spirit, and also, I have a little bit, but the shopping of it all, the what do you want for Christmas is either you or my two front teeth and maybe some stuff. But I'm looking at all the stuff, and I was like, do I need more stuff? Do we need more stuff? I don't know if I need more stuff.
No, nobody needs more stuff. You know what you always could use is another puzzle.
I get Quinn and Matt's reject puzzles,
or like you're getting caviar today. I'm always for a food splurge, a food gift.
I'm also if I want something, it'll be a rug in my apartment or something apartment wise.
Actually, thematically, a lot of people in my life have been like, "Ooh, Christmas materialism." Not feeling it this year. I think I always like an experience.
I do too.
That's what I always like.
What's hard is that my family's so generous, so kind, so generous. And my mom loves to give us gifts to open on Christmas Day. And it's so kind. And I'm just I don't know what I want. And I don't want to ask for things just to ask for them. That feels wasteful too. But it's causing me a little agita and stress, even being in the store. Also, one of the things I asked for, I was like, I need clothes for dates. And I don't think my family can pick that out for me.
They're like,
And they've been so sweet. They've been like, is this some clothes for dates? Is this some clothes? And I'm like,
you're at an age where people can't buy you clothes other than you.
They can.
Someone could buy you a scarf. Nobody's buying your clothes. That's crazy.
My sister would. My mom would. But I'm I just don't think my mom and my mom is going to be the person that's like, yeah, this makes you look fuckable.
That's what I'm saying. You have to buy it. You have to try it on and feel good
in it
and
buy
it.
Yeah.
You can't ask.
I can't.
Yeah. No, it's not.
But they're
a
thing. What do you need?
You know what they could get you is they could pay for.
Newly.
I would love a Newly. Yeah, that would be a gift I would love. If somebody was here's a month of Newly, I'd be yay, it's my favorite thing. It's so much fun.
Although
not sponsored, magically not sponsored. I got to write them and be I talk about you all the time already. Can I just have 1 month free?
Can we do a promo code?
Can I have $20
off
one item?
Would be great. Would be great. And then last night, I went and had ramen with my sister, looked at materialism, and then And I tried clothes on, which why on earth, just as a sidebar, worse lighting, dressing rooms are, they're terrible. What are you doing?
It's confusing.
What are you doing?
Don't you want to make money?
Don't you want me to feel good about this thing? Anyway, and then I went to, and saw Die Hard in a theater for the first time.
So fun. Did you have a blast? It's a great movie.
I had so much fun. That movie goes so hard. That movie is...
That's why it's called that.
Why is it called Die Hard? I actually don't know why it's called Die Hard.
I don't either, but when you see it, you're suddenly you know what? There was nothing else
that
you could have possibly
called this. There's explosions every other minute. Bruce.
How great is Alan Rickman in it?
Do you know they found out that that's his first movie?
No shit.
He's He's a god among men. He apparently, this is my friend, I have not corroborated this, but I believe it to be true because my friend's a movie guy. He was saying that Alan Rickman was like a carpenter, and then at 30 he was like, I'm going to try my hand at acting. And then he like acted on stage a bunch of times, and they're like, you should try out for this movie in LA. And Alan Rickman goes to LA, first audition, books fucking Die Hard as Hans fucking Gruber.
What happened
in that audition? They're like, that guy's voice, we don't know what's happening in his vocal cords. Let's get him on the film. And he's so fucking great at it. And then apparently that scene where he's like pretending to be one of the hostages with his American accent, apparently that wasn't in the original script. They like put that in because he could do an American accent. And they're like, this is a fun thing. We've never seen these two see each other.
That's great.
And I, you know, there's just, it was really fun. Yeah, it was really, really fun. I really enjoyed it.
The best, frankly. The
Bruce Willis
best.
Is so hot in it.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, here's one of my favorite.
Here's some of my favorite
moments that happened in it. One, there's like a massive explosion, and Bruce Willis is like running barefoot up the stairs, and just because he walks by, a Christmas tree just falls, which I laughed out loud because it was so like it's like there was a massive explosion. The world is in disarray, and he walks by, and a Christmas tree just goes. And it tips, and you're like, why? And then when his wife, by the way, these are spoiler alerts. If you don't haven't seen it, fast forward. But when his wife finally gets got and she's like being kidnapped, the whole beginning of the movie, she's wearing this like peach V-neck top, and like it's covering. She's like not showing cleavage. Like she's looking like a conservative business lady. The moment, the exact moment that Hans Gruber takes her and kidnaps her. Would you believe it? The buttons are unbuttoned. Her bra is showing. Her tits are out. And I like, it was so incredible to see. It was so great. I loved it because it was like, how are we gonna make this kidnapping more believable? Let's tart her up. It was like, and then I looked at my friend and I was like, her tits are out. Like, it's like this. And it's like truly a conservative mom with a great 80s curl. And then the next scene, like her boobs look great, but they're like her bra's exposed and she looks like it's fucking King Kong.
That's how you know it's in. Everything is falling to shit.
But it's what a fun movie. And are you in the discourse of, is it a Christmas movie?
Is it a Christmas movie?
People are like, Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's a Christmas movie.
Other thing is, in the movie theater that I was in, there was someone very drunk. Around the corner for me, and she just kept going, it's Die Hard, bitch. Screaming that.
Wow, just like heckling or I don't know, cheering for.
There was like there were some claps around the theater, but she just kept being like, it's Die Hard, bitch. And she said it multiple times, and we were at Nighthawk and I'm in Williamsburg, and I was like, they frown upon people talking during these movies, so I don't know what's happening. Ma'am, calm down. Anyway, that's that. That was the couple days that I had. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily. And we have, have to thank a delightful Patreon, babe. And her name is Clarissa, you don't want to miss a Clarissa. Clarissa is a fan of the podcast. She's a fan of fun. She loves a good time. Clarissa goes to parties and hangs. Clarissa goes to party with fangs. She's not a vampire. She just got canines because she's a human. But she's a fun time. Don't bite her neck.
Clarissa explains it all. I hope you don't fall into a pit. And I hope you never quit listening. To me.
Right. Okay. Oh, you know what we haven't talked about, actually?
Oh, God. Rob Reiner.
I don't know if I can.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm so sad. It makes me feel so sad. And if you voted for Trump, explain. Please explain. I
mean, explain why you're here.
Explain.
If you voted for Trump and you're on this podcast feed.
No, there are people that did, I think. But I'm... Here's my thing.
Explain that message.
Write to me and explain that message. How a family man that made these movies that are iconic that he was killed by his son. The saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
The poor other kids, and the tweet, or the twat, or whatever, that
he made it about himself. I couldn't.
I mean, it wasn't. Quinn, and it wasn't said that he had it. It wasn't that coming. He made it about himself that bothers me. God. It's that he said that he caused
like,
it.
You did this to yourself because of his, because you don't like me.
What? I mean, Rob Reiner. He's like truly. I mean, he was 78 years old.
The saddest thing I've ever
like
heard.
This, and this man and was like,
they were fighting at Conan's Christmas party. And I'm like, how's Conan? I got to dip into the podcast and see what Conan's reaction is to all of this. So fucking crazy to like, and the feeling of like seeing them both the day before it happens at your home. Ugh, and so many people saw them. I mean, it's just that feeling of like, no one could have ever known it was going to go that far south. Oh, like it hurts my stomach. It always makes me so upset when it's like a family thing like that too. It's so much worse than anything else.
It's like clearly if what we're hearing is true, that it is his son is a very unwell person. And my heart breaks because he has two other kids. And in one night they lost both parents and their brother. Like I just...
Yeah.
It's just
how do you ever heal from something like that?
But he like so sad. I mean when Harry met Sally, you know, like this is Spinal Tap. Like if you can
this is Spinal Tap was his first movie that he directed.
You know, like
Princess Bride, yo. Like
Princess Bride. Like watch a Rob Reiner movie because like that guy navigated the world with so much heart. I also found out, and I'm sure we've seen the memes, is that like he was integral in helping pass the gay marriage legislation, the decision that like allowed for gay marriage to be legalized federally by the Supreme Court. Like he helped like I don't know exactly, but he was an ally. He believed in love. I found out too, I think this is a cute anecdote, is he met his wife on When Harry Met Sally. And at the end of the original script, the two of them didn't end up together, but he met his wife and he changed the ending.
It was like, I believe in a thing called love.
He changed the ending.
I love that.
It's really sad. And his wife was a talented photographer and it's really heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. All right, Quinn, do you want to tell a story?
Is it me or you?
Give it a little pause. Okay. Give it a little pause. Well, that's not a pause because you're breathing in the microphone. Hey, Quinn, can you give it a pause?
Take a note.
Do, 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 do. Quinn, I need you to pause.
Beep. Wait, I just hit a button. Oh, that's what it is. I hit a button and suddenly... Welcome to Derry was playing in my ears.
Welcome to Derry.
Like, I'm so scared. Yeah, Welcome to Derry. You're not watching? Terrifying.
What's Welcome?
It's the It prequel show on HBO, and it's so great.
Cool.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
I'm going to tell you from BBC.
Are you?
What it?
But are you?
Yeah, and Wikipedia and this other thing called pmc.ncbi.nlm. What is that? Who knows? Jean-Claude Raymond is the person I'm telling a story about. He's French. You may be able to put that together by the name. And we're in France. We're in Lyon. He's really smart, but he drops out of school. And then he enrolls as a medical student. And he tells everybody in his life that he's passing all his medical exams. This is the mid-70s that this is happening. But actually, he didn't take the medical exams, and he never became a doctor. But he's telling everyone in his life, including his parents, that he's a doctor. He does this for about 20 years of his life. Like, it is remarkable. He pretends to be a successful doctor, and he says he's a medical researcher for the World Health Organization, and that he's researching arteriosclerosis, and he's just like pretends that he's got lunches with like bigwigs in town. He has just a fake life. It's miraculous in and of itself. Really, you must be saying to yourself, what are you doing if you're not being a doctor, but you're telling everyone you are? He would go, they had a free area at the World Health Organization, like I picture a library kind of, and he would go hang out there like a lot of the time. He would tell people he had a business trip and he'd drive to the airport and then he'd get an airport hotel and just hang out in the airport hotel and then come back from his business trip.
Okay. This is intense.
He'd come home. He has a wife and kids and he'd come home and bring them gifts from his trips. It was just so wild. He's actually, and then I'm like, how could you be married and be like, I'm a doctor, but you're not bringing home money, right? Like their finances is really interesting to me, but I guess he sold an apartment that he had some money from. He lived off his wife's salary, and then he would ask people for money to invest in hedge funds. But he would just keep, he would be like, that's my doctor's salary. Like, I need a salary. I'm not doing anything. In October of 1988, Pierre Crolet, his father-in-law, his wife's dad, dies. They're together. And what we know is that he has a fall down a staircase and dies. Now, the background on this is that before it happens,
the way you're saying it is not good.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows, truly. What I do know is that people said Pierre was like one of the people that had invested and that he was asking for some returns on the investment and kind of pushing and being like, what happened with that investment? And when the police got there on the scene, he was still alive. Like, he hadn't died yet, but he was dying. And he would, and he said supposedly, Jean-Claude, me, like Jean-Claude, like he's like basically like dying breath. And then Jean-Claude ran over. How cinematic is this? And puts an oxygen mask on him. He's like, shh.
What the fuck?
You better have some oxygen. Died of his injuries a few days later, but like never woke up from whatever, like he went into a coma. He did not. Was not able to articulate what had happened, and it was ruled an accident. And of course, Jean-Claude's reaction is not only does he have a funeral, but he has a fundraiser on behalf of his father-in-law. And I think you can assume where that money went.
It went to a right? foundation that helps assist his daughter and children by way of his son-in-law.
By way of assisting himself. So 4 years go by after that death, and now we're in 1992, and more people are, it's been some time, people would like to see a return on the money that they've invested in these hedge funds. And one of the, some friend of the family is like, this is fishy, and somehow calls WHO, I mean, I call them WHO because it's like capital
the World Health Organization.
Yeah. Calls them and is like, hey, who work for who? And they're like, not Jean-Claude. And they're like,
can't
really?
Find that guy.
It seems strange. So flash forward to January 1993, the very beginning of 1993, and Jean-Claude withdraws 2,000 francs, which is not that much money. I think it's like $500. I don't know. He borrows a gun from his dad. He buys gas canisters and asks for them to be gift wrapped. Very strange behavior. And then that night, he beats his wife to death with a rolling pin.
My God.
In their bed. And he just leaves her body in the bed. And the next morning he wakes up, he wakes his kids, brings them down for breakfast, makes them breakfast, watches cartoons with them, and then takes them back to their bedrooms and tells them to get in bed and then shoots them. So at this point, he's killed his whole family, and the only people that would maybe know about his life and have something to say about it left that are close to him are his parents and his former mistress. So I guess he had a mistress. Maybe they had broken it off. Maybe they were off and on. But she also had lent him money, and so had his parents. So they were people that would also maybe be wanting that money back at some point. So now his whole family's dead, and they're each in their beds. He goes to his parents' house and has lunch with his parents, and then after lunch, shoots them both and their family dog. That night, he goes and picks up his mistress, and he's like, we're going to go have dinner with someone fancy. I'm so fancy. And then he's like, oh, I think I'm lost. I can't figure out where, you know what? We got to get out of the car for a minute. And then he starts to try to strangle her with a cord, and he sprays tear gas in her face.
Oh my God.
She starts to fight him, and his reaction to her fighting him is he just stops. And he's like, I'm really sorry.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? And then they fight, and she's like, take me home. And he does.
What?
So she's like this sole survivor of this massacre of everyone in his life. And what the fuck came over him in the middle of trying to kill her? She's like, stop it. And he's like, okay. What?
What the fuck?
And he's like, don't tell anybody I tried to kill you.
Honor system.
Honor system.
Pinky promise me. What the fuck?
So then he goes home, and his family is all dead in his house, and he just sits in this house with all these corpses and watches television. Then he puts oil all around the house to light the house on fire, and he takes an overdose of sleeping pills. But the pills were expired, and he had what I read were more effective pills that would have done the job. So it's this feeling of, it doesn't feel like, it feels like a fake suicide. Right. Like he's giving himself quite a chance, I guess. Like it's, he also starts the fire at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is the time that the road cleaners come by, like, and do street mm-hmm. sweeping. And he knew that. So it's this feeling of, I'm taking pills that might not kill me. I'm lighting my house on fire when I know somebody's going to notice it.
Okay.
Like, people are basically like, I don't know.
It's all a call for help. Yeah, it's manipulation.
Real. Like, it's like, of course you wanted to die. You just killed everyone you love. But also, it seems like
a half-assed attempt.
You wanted to stage that you mm-hmm. wanted to die because it's easier to explain everything if it's a murder-suicide situation. The firefighters come and rescue him. July 1996, he is found guilty. He's sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole for 22 years. There's an appeals court that grants him parole in 2019 after being in jail for 26 years. And they release him to the custody of a monastery. So he has like an ankle bracelet and he's living in a monastery. And he's diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. Which
we knew that was coming.
Like, not, yeah. And then this monastery is so interesting. So it's like, imagine that this guy that killed all these people, his whole family, because he's selfish and had lied to them for 20 years and just was like, shoot, I'm really up against a wall now. I better kill everyone. Who's going to take him? Who's going to let him live with them? Apparently this monastery, who has a very strange history in and of itself, where in the 70s, it had a former Nazi militia leader live there. He lived there in hiding under the protection of these monks. And then they arrested him in Nice. And he went to jail for life for crimes against humanity. But he was living under their protection. This village is called Fontgumbult, And everybody's like, so how do you feel about your new neighbor? This guy that killed his entire family and the family dog. How do you feel about him moving in? And there was a woman named Karen quoted that said, everyone knew for a long time that Jean-Claude Raymond was due to come. It was just the monks and the mayor who pretended not to know. This will not change our lives, and the monks look after themselves. And then this guy in town said, he will have an electronic bracelet. He's certainly no longer dangerous. At least it will clear some space in the prisons. It's easy for us to say, but for the family, it must be tough. And for the record, yeah, it's horrible. His wife's brother is like, what in the goddamn world? You released this guy? He killed everyone.
It's wild.
And he said, the word free is hard to hear. For me, he's one. And I totally get that, where it's like, yeah, he served time, but this is a narcissist that in the end just gets to live in this monastery and like go about his life when everyone else doesn't get
to live.
Is
he still alive?
I don't know. How old would he be? I wonder. Yeah, I don't know the answer. He probably is, 2019. Should I Google, is Jean-Claude Raymond alive? Let's do it.
And he's...
It looks like it says born in Wikipedia, no death date. And he's 54. Yeah. So I think so.
Jesus Christ. That's insane.
But his two kids, his parents and his wife.
I mean, there's like a lot of different countries who do criminal justice a different way. And I'm not saying, I will say, I think the U.S. is failing, to be clear. Like, we don't have restorative justice. Mm-hmm. There are other countries that incarceration, the penal system is vastly different. Mm-hmm. And that's what it sounds like it's happening in France.
Totally. That's why it was also interesting to hear these people that live there be like, well, what do you want? He's going to take up space in a prison? Like, I don't know. There was something practical about what they were saying. Yeah. And it was interesting because I feel like, for better or worse, we're just more emotional.
I mean, I think we're probably more emotional. I think but it also sounds like, I think in different countries,
our reactivity is like, punish.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
I'm not saying for better or worse. I'm just noting that it felt like there was a levelness in what they were saying where they were like, well, what? Yeah, he's moving here. He's not dangerous. Killed everybody that he was going to kill.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, really
sad. It does feel like, I can't imagine as a family member. I mean, it doesn't sound like they're all chill about it because her brother's like, what the fuck? Like, he won.
Brother's like, I would be like taking to the streets with a torch. I don't know.
Wow. Okay. A familicide, a casual familicide on a Tuesday morning. Here we are on a Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. If we're going to go by manipulative stories, that's the theme today, is manipulation. I got this. This is okay. A little short but sweet. I got this information from Fox 10. It's not sweet. Fox 10 People, Mercury News, Inside Edition. And what I want to say is this story does deal with like accusations of domestic violence. And so I'll get to it later, but we're going to find out quickly that people are using it as a manipulation tool. And I think I just want to say that before when I cover these stories is like false reporting accounts for such a small percentage of these things. And so this is why it's noteworthy, is that there is, here we are. So this is a story about Laura Owens, but Laura Owens is the daughter of like a well-known radio personality in San Francisco. Apparently she's a podcaster. She's an equestrian. So we have a horse girl with a podcast. I don't know. Apparently she has a knack for speaking and she also does real estate. So she's lived in like San Francisco. She lives in Arizona. And enter Clayton Echard. Clayton Echard is a TV personality. He played college football for Missouri and then went to maybe play in the pros, but didn't make it to the pros. But what he did make it to is The Bachelorette season 16. So he was one of the contestants on Bachelorette. And then he went on to star in his season of The Bachelor, season 26 of The Bachelor. And I guess from what I understand, again, I don't watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, is he was one of like the few people that I think proposed to his the lady, and she turned him down.
Okay.
So, you know, he's over in Arizona. He's a real estate guy. He's selling a home. And he gets a call from this lady, Laura Owens, who I mentioned. And she's like, I'm really curious about buying the home. And he's like, oh, yeah? And she comes in. She's cute. She's brunette. She's a tiny little girl. And she's like, oh, you're cute. Maybe she knows him from The Bachelor. I don't know. But the lines get a little blurred. And the two of them go out on a date. And the date goes a little bit further. And they hook up. And then the next morning they part, and then he texts her, which is like not a text anyone wants to see after kind of a one night stand, which was, last night was a mistake. Doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good.
No.
He was not great. It's not a great feeling, but he's like, I think we took this too far. Let's not do that again. Sorry, but are we cool? Oh, cool? Okay. So then 11 days later, he gets a text from Laura Owens, and she's like, hey, here's this, I'm going to send you a little picture, and it's not like a fun nudie, it's a positive pregnancy test. And she's like, congratulations, wow, wow, wow. Daddy. And then it's very soon that she's like, and it's twins. And he's like, whoa, this really escalated. And he's sitting there scratching his damn head because he's going, you know what? I took sex education. I think I understand how sex works. And here's the thing. We did not have intercourse. Here's the thing. We didn't fuck. Here's the thing. I think we just hooked up, but I don't know. He's like, I was pretty high on weed. He was like, I was high on marijuana in an interview. He's like, but I remember what happened. We didn't have sex.
That's so funny.
And she's like, it happened, and I'm pregnant. And he's like, I don't want to
Wow, she's really banking on him being like, out
well, I
of
think
it.
Like she's banking on that he doesn't know how bodies work. And you know what? I think with the sex education in the United States, I think that's like actually, you know, it's a good effort. Good try. Good game. Good game. Mm-hmm. Good game. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to be with her. But she starts like bombarding him, he says, with pictures of ultrasounds and sonograms and videos of her looking pregnant. Like she's in the mirror and like her stomach is out. You see it. It's like she looks pregnant, which as like a pro tip, don't ever assume someone is pregnant. Just like from me to you. I think that's like a fun piece of advice to give you. So yeah. She takes him to court. She files a paternity lawsuit against him in 2023, and she claims he's fathered.
Wow, she's crazy.
He's fathered her unborn twins during this one night stand. He denies the claim. In court documents, he says, what is it? In court documents, he's like, she fabricated this pregnancy, which could not have resulted in the party's interactions because they never had sex. Her mom apparently corroborates the story. But at this court proceeding, like, he actually goes and he's like, I demand a paternity test. And this has been like, again, she tells him she's pregnant 11 days after they see each other. This has been 5 months of him being like, she's mm-hmm. not pregnant. I'm not the father. What the fuck is going on? And so once they go to court, it is clear that she's not pregnant. And he says that she's taken medications to appear more bloated than she is. And at that point, she's like, imagine? I actually had a miscarriage, but I didn't know it right away. And then she starts making accusations against sexual violence against him. So in 2024, the judge determines that she knowingly presented a false claim to the court. They do a paternity test and they reveal that there's little to no fetal DNA present. So I don't know if they can like say conclusively nothing is there, but they're like, there's nothing, no DNA, there's no parentage. So Clayton is granted a petition for non-paternity and his attorney fees in this legal claim. Mm-hmm. But he's like confronting her in this court and he's like, I don't know you. In fact, he ends up filing not an order of protection, but he files an injunction against her. And he had said in an interview that this was very specifically done because an injunction means I don't know this person. It was kind of like, he's like, I was a little mm-hmm. bit petty. I was like, I don't know her. So it's not an order of protection. Mm-hmm. An order of protection would imply that I have a relationship with you and I don't. I'm filing an injunction against you. And what's interesting mm-hmm. though, is that this is not the first time Laura Owens has done this. She has done this to two other men that she has had brief relationships a long-term relationship with. So one guy, Greg, she went on 3 dates with him and he was like, I'm not feeling it. I don't think I want a relationship. And she tells him she's pregnant. In fact, I think I have the text she sends him because hold on, let me see. The text she sends him is, It looks like you're going to be a dad to one or two babies. Was sick enough to go to the clinic this afternoon and had to get an ultrasound to make sure I wasn't in an ectopic pregnancy. I wasn't. I found out that I've been pregnant with twins. Looks like one of them passed or isn't doing well, probably because of the medicine I took. I had the option of a surgical abortion and elected not to. If I'm going through this on my own, I will let God decide if he wants both one or none to be born. And the kids would deserve to know their father's side of the family. I'm giving you one more shot. Like, and then at that point, she's like, well, listen, she tells him she's pregnant. And then she's like, you can decide whether I have an abortion only if you agree to be in a committed relationship with me.
That is also how a relationship should start.
You know what?
That's going to be
a really healthy foundation.
And success.
And so then there's evidence that she files a lawsuit against that guy, saying that he employed false promises and verbal and emotional abuse to coerce her into getting an abortion. So like she's twisting this idea of he like, okay, I'll be in a relationship. Please terminate the pregnancy. I don't know. In the accusation, mm-hmm. the man denies any coercion and he's like, she's not pregnant. How can you coerce someone who's not fucking pregnant? She sent him mm-hmm. sonograms, images, all that stuff, and he reversed Google searched them and can find where they were from originally. Mm-hmm. In this instance, she's asking for, and then she started asking for $45,000 in damages from this man. And the case draws out for 2 years until it's ultimately dismissed, but she does get an order of protection against him. Mm-hmm. Then she does this to another man years ago called Michael Marincini. And this is her ex-boyfriend from San Francisco. The two of them met in 2016, and 2 months later, she tells him she's pregnant. And he's like, I was suspicious because we only had unprotected sex. She takes him to civil court and claims that she is again pregnant with twins. This woman has got a lot of eggs dropping. There's a lot of twins cooking in that belly of hers.
She loves the twins narrative.
I think we're elevating the narrative. She once again sends him a bunch of sonograms. 6 months later, she admits to him that she's made up multiple pregnancies. He breaks up with mm-hmm. her, and then she starts making accusations that he abused her, that he strangled her, that he beat her. He denies all claims. She tries to get a domestic violence restraining order against him. And what's crazy is they were on and off for 17 months. And he's like, she's not pregnant. I'm not abusive. But these restraining orders are levied against him, and they affect his job, his life. They're searchable. Like, his life feels destroyed. He ends up meeting another woman, and they have a really lovely relationship, and they get married. And throughout this time, he's still in legal proceedings with Laura. Mm-hmm. And Laura is also going on podcasts and making claims of abuse against these people and mm-hmm. using it as a way to get attention. Let's just be honest. But it's really sad. This guy marries this woman and she's like, I'm afraid to post pictures of my wedding because I don't know what Laura Owens is going to do or say on social media.
Yeah.
While she's in court proceedings with Clayton claiming pregnancy with him, she tries to make the restraining order against Michael permanent, but she's in the midst of this legal battle 700 miles away in Arizona, and she hasn't been in contact with Mike for several years. She's like, in the podcast, she's like, yeah, he never reached out to me. He never harmed me after the fact. He never tried to contact me, but I would like this restraining order to be permanently on him. And so the judge was like, mm-hmm. you have to show up either remotely or in person. And the reality is she couldn't leave Arizona where this court proceeding was with Clayton because she was just released on criminal charges because she had been accused of perjury and lying and falsifying and all of that stuff. And so she didn't mm-hmm. show up to that court date. So that protective order was dismissed. And Mike says, I feel like the handcuffs have been taken off when this protective order was dismissed. And he was like, you know, this protective order barred me from visiting friends in the San Francisco area where Laura once mm-hmm. lived. And so we see now that there's this pattern of this woman who dates men. And if they don't want to be with her, she makes these accusations, once of one of pregnancy to try to get them to stay. And then if that doesn't work, it then levels up to coercion and accusations of domestic violence and sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, Clayton, who is like a well-known TV media personality, so people are following his case. This is getting a lot of traction, and these claims against him, once they are dismissed, In Arizona, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office investigates the claims against Clayton and investigates Laura's claims. And they take it to the grand jury, and the grand jury indicts her on 4 counts of perjury, 1 count of forgery, 1 count of tampering with physical evidence, and 1 count of fraudulent schemes and artifices. All in all, she is indicted on 7 felony charges, all of which she pleads not guilty. At the trial, Clayton is able to confront her, and he says he, like, looks to her mother, who, with hate and scorn in his eyes because she corroborated the story, he's like, I've never dealt with a crazier person in my life. I don't actually know, understand how this person exists. And at the trial, they see that she's lied, that she fabricated sonograms, that the ultrasound video was ripped from a YouTube video. She had claimed previously that she saw 8 to 10 doctors. When they got documentation, she never met with these 8 to 10 doctors. She just called the office and was like, can I get an appointment or a video consultation? But in reality, she was never seen by these doctors. She faces 7 felony charges. This whole deal with Clayton took 2 years. With Mike, it took 10 years. Apparently, some of the case is going to be, I think she's going to trial in January of 2026. But yeah, I just wanted to tell the story of Laura Owens and the accusations that she would levy against these men. And I wanted to ask our dear readers, do you think this is a good way to keep a man? And should I try it?
She'll try anything. She'll get, you know, once. Once.
I mean, to me, she gets greedy 3 times. 3 times?
The twins thing is so silly. Like, just randomly being like, and do you think it's because, twins. Like, for what reason?
Do you think it's because she only could get the 1 sonogram and ultrasound, and she's like, oh, I need it to be twins. I need it to be. I need it to be that. But it's really, you know, I think what, again, what's so troubling about this case is many things, right? It's like such a fear, I think, of being like, oh God, like you go home with someone and you're like, there's like such trust that you have with someone by doing that. But more importantly, like her making these false accusations takes away from very real accusations that people have. You know what I mean? Like the story of her being this like little boogeyman who is like leveling these pregnancy accusations. Like, how many people are going?
She's the next welfare queen. It's like, don't
ruin it. Like,
don't harm everybody.
Yeah, and she is. And I think, like, to me, she seems like a narcissist.
It's a greater harm than it even seems. Like, yeah. Because
it's pervasive in that it's making it seem like this is a common practice that people would make these accusations of pregnancy, of domestic violence, when the reality is people don't report those nearly enough, and people get off scot-free in those moments. So you know, it is heartbreaking in that way. I think her punishment should be, she needs to go and help people. She needs to work in a shelter and help people who are actually dealing with these horribly traumatic.
Yeah, that's really smart that the punishment should fit the crime and should also be instructive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Have so much fun. Have so much fun. You're going to have a great time. And you get to see
Mike. So we'll record while I'm there.
Okay, yeah, we'll record when you're there. I'm going to snowball Mike, ready to go, baby.
You got Larry Snowball, and I'll bring the adapter this time. Remember last time Matt didn't let me bring it? He was like, you don't need this. And then I almost divorced him.
Yeah, but you always divorce him all the time. It's like a comment. It's like a fun thing. It's a fun thing for you guys.
It's a trope.
It's a trope. It's like kind of like, it's your thing. It's your thing that you do.
So you have a big day today. Get some work done. Yeah. Get some relaxation done. Make some tea.
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
Treat yourself. Make some leftover chili.
Yeah, I have so much. I got to put some in the freezer. But now I have friend here.
Yeah, freeze it. So smart. You'll be so happy for that all winter. Because then every 4 weeks when you're not sick of it again, you thaw that baby out.
Hey, fucking man. See you soon, dear readers. Love ya.
Bye.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.